When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Headlines seize our attention, especially when they're about a crime.
But there's more to these stories than just their headlines.
I'm Carrie Ipama.
And I'm Quinlan Posner.
Every week, we'll bring you a real crime that made the headlines. One you may have heard of before, or one you may have never imagined possible.
But we'll take you beyond what you see on the front page. We'll follow the story as it happens in real time and use hindsight to pull apart fact from fiction.
From Lifetime comes a brand new weekly podcast, Crime of a Lifetime.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Get right to the romance and find the way to wow this Valentine's with 1-800-Flowers.com. From classic roses and bouquets to decadent chocolate-covered berries, gourmet treats, and more. Surprise your Valentine with 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, get the 18-stem Enchanted Rose Medley for $39.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in.
Welcome to the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. We shall open with a poem from Arsene Wenger. When you have just the trousers on, it is easy to take the trousers off as well. But when you are naked completely, you have to find the shirt to try to put it on again and dress normal again. Whew. Welcome to the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. I'm here with Dan.
Hello.
We're here with some beautiful Chinese music playing on in the background. That was a poem from Arsene Wenger after the weekend's podcast. We're back here again. The music sounds serene, but Arsenal are not. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling wise and inspired.
Outside of that, I'm talking about Arsenal, Dan. Not general day-to-day life. How are you feeling?
I'm in a dark death spiral as usual.
Yeah, we really are in the spiral of doom. Arsenal lost to Brighton at the weekend. I think it's hard to say that that was unexpected.
Don't know.
No? Well, you thought that that was unexpected?
A little bit. Come on. Brighton?
I thought that was going to happen. I thought they were more than capable.
Did you call that? You called that loss. Is that what you're telling me?
I didn't call anything. But in my head, I felt that that was, I felt there was a chance. You didn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Arsenal lost to Brighton away from home. I think in the last two Manchester City games, it was clear that the boys had thrown in the towel a little bit on the season. The big question before the game was, like, how far do they want to take it? Did they want to show the manager that they really wanted him out? And I think categorically the answer was yes, but we'll explore that in a little bit more detail as we go along today. So, Dan, do you want to lead in with some horrific statistics before we jump into the contents of today's podcast?
Yeah, let's get into it. Let's talk about where we're at by the numbers. I've got an interesting statistic for you. In 2018, all competitions, we've lost more games than we've won and drawn combined.
Wow, also, that's depressing.
Also, in Premier League this season, we've lost more games than we've won and drawn combined.
Wow. I've played 14 and lost 8.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't think I said away in the last stat there, but that was the away record. So the away record in the Premier League right now, 3 wins, 4 draws, 8 losses.
That's incredible.
That is incredible.
And in total, we've played 29 and lost 10. Unbelievable.
I feel like you have to try to be that bad.
I think this is the worst. I think we've got the worst win ratio ever for Arsene Wenger.
It's got to be.
So I think
I'm not even going to look it up, but it's got to be.
It's 44%-ish. We could finish the season in our lowest position ever under Arsene Wenger. I think he could finish this season lower than Bruce Rioch. Bruce Rioch took us from 13th to 5th. I think we're eight points behind 5th. Five points away from 7th. I mean, ideally, that's where you want to finish, 7th. Like, I mean,
not me.
We don't want a hope of Europe.
I don't want to get in Burnley's way.
I don't want to.
On their way to the top.
And they've had a good season.
Yeah, it just disappears. Actually, I'm sorry to stop you, but can I give you one more stat that pertains to City and us that I dug up looking at the table? Like you said, you know, we've gone through 2 horrible losses to them and then Brighton on the heels of that, which means that now, as it stands, Manchester City now have the same number of points as they finished with last season. 29 matches in, same number of points. Meanwhile, for Arsenal, it is now mathematically impossible for us to finish with the same number of points as we did last season.
Today, but I don't want to get too in the weeds about the Brighton game because I feel like it's just part of the collection of terrible games that we've been having this season. So I think when I talk about what we're witnessing in general, I think we should talk about what did Wenger do to try and prevent Brighton, because I think that that's interesting. You can generally tell where a manager's head is by how ambitious he is in the changes that he makes. And I don't think what we saw at the weekend indicated that Wenger has any control over the situation or any idea of how to get out of it. Wenger's lost 2 games, pretty average performances in both. So his solution was to drop Hector Bellerin, bring in Kolasinac, not a fan favourite. Well, maybe a fan favourite, but definitely not a great performer. He brought Iwobi into the team, continued with Xhaka. If you are trying to shake things up at Arsenal, why would you persist with such a bland lineup? Like, what do you think that the manager was thinking there?
I don't really know. I think he claimed Ramsey was sat for fitness. It sounded like he thought he was tired after the past 2 games. I don't know. Do you buy it?
He's only just come back from injury. I mean, I suppose that's a fair point, that he's only just come back from injury. He didn't play particularly well in either of the Manchester City games. But I don't know. It feels a bit odd because today Arsenal.com released a story saying it was basically alluding to the rested players were there for Milan.
I suppose you assume you can beat Brighton in really any form you're in normally, right? I don't know. Maybe it's just that. Maybe it's the, as bad as things are, it's the assumption that it shouldn't be a problem. I can rest, you know, at least 1 or 2 of my key guys. I don't know. What do you make of Bellerin? Do you think that was...
Well, there's a report in The Sun tonight saying he's furious about being dropped. I mean, In fairness to Wenger, Bellerin is overplayed. I think he's has the most minutes for Arsenal this season. He's a bit of a robot.
He's right up there for sure.
But I don't know. I think I would have preferred him in the side to Kolasinac. But yeah, I like resting Ramsey. I'm not really sure. You think you give him a run out and let him dominate a side, because he certainly didn't do that in the last two games.
But he's still one of our, you know, most important players, and to rest him for this when you're trying to find form is, I don't know. There's some question marks there for sure.
Yeah, it definitely feels absurd that you wouldn't want to put out your best players for that game to at least get a win under your belt, so that going into Milan you guaranteed that you had the right players available.
Right.
And also, our first team hasn't been playing Europa League this year. They should have fresh legs.
No, yeah. That's the crazy part. Remember we were all excited that we wouldn't really have to get tired this season, because we'd really only be in one competition with the first team, and you know, the scrubs could come in and mop up Europa League for us and we'd stay fresh. But
This is my point on Aaron Ramsey, and I know that everybody loves him and thinks that he's amazing. I think it's a little bit a sign of the times, in my opinion. The guy's only had to deal with one game a week, and he's only played, 35% of our Premier League games? No, he's missed 35% of our Premier League games this year. That's kind of poor. I mean, we can talk a little bit later about whether we...
I mean, that's his body, though. You know, like, what season has he done where he's... I mean, he generally gets more games than he has, but he's always out for a couple of weeks. You know, he's always
important
got a hamstring.
Weeks.
Yeah, important weeks.
Yeah, usually in December.
He's always got a hamstring or a thigh or something going on.
Then he takes 7 games to get back into form.
Right.
And then he's back in form right at the end of the season or right at the start of the season. The stories are from Draper over at the Daily Mail saying that Arsenal are going to try and sell him. Agree or disagree?
I disagree, but I would say if that's the plan, if he's not going to sign on, absolutely make it happen this summer. I'm not about the situation we got into last time. There's no reason to let it slide. You know, it's decision time this summer.
So we are off topic again. Let's get back on it. Pretty shoddy lineup. Wenger making some missteps. He obviously doesn't understand the severity of the situation, because he's resting important players. Or he does understand the severity of the situation and he's putting all of his money on the Europa League, which is probably more realistic. I mean,
it is.
Chances of us getting fifth are now pretty slim. So the chances of fourth are all but gone. Then the game happens. We're down inside 20 minutes again. And then we actually go 2 goals down, which was shocking. We're getting dominated by a group of well-organized journeymen. We pull one back at halftime. That Xhaka finds an assist. Almost looks like that whole goal was a sheepish accident. And then the second half, like, what did you think of the reaction? Yeah. What did you expect a reaction as pathetic as the one that was...
I expected a reaction, but there seemed to be none at all, which I don't know. You had to imagine he was giving a fire and brimstone halftime talk, right? But I don't know. We just didn't look alive again. The spirit's not there.
Players feel body language as well. And you looked at the bench. Wenger's eyes were getting redder and redder. Like, he looked more and more angry. He looked lost. I know that he's looked broken before, but he looks completely confused about what's going on at the moment. Do you think the players can sense that maybe this is the end game?
Yeah, I think absolutely they can. And it, like you said, the body language is there for sure. And I think everyone picks up on that. I mean, he's not the guy that's out there raving on the touchline, but he still would, I don't know, you can tell there's a marked difference when someone's staring at, like, down at their feet half the time and his eyes are reddening and he looks like he's clueless and he looks like he just desperately wants something to happen, but he doesn't know what exactly.
He was cracking, it looked like a pencil, like breaking up pencils, like trying to get rid of that nervous tension. So
we didn't pull anything back. Didn't even look like we were going to threaten Brighton. We lost. Same old, same old. Terrible performance from Xhaka. I honestly don't know what that guy has to do to get dropped. I know that I said it last week.
I'm starting to feel bad that we spend 10 minutes talking about how poor Xhaka is every week. But then he gives
the ball away. He's not paying attention to
It's run. Really suspect at this point.
Yeah, I don't understand. And this is what I would have liked from Wenger. Be bold. Start Eddie Nketiah. Start
El-Nenners, man. Put him in the middle.
Or Maitland-Niles. Or, I don't know, do something to shake up the side.
Need more Maitland-Niles for sure.
Because Nketiah came on, and he doesn't look like he's been brutalized by the regime yet. Because he's got confidence, right?
Hey, he looked like a truck came and dropped him off, and he didn't know where he was. And he was just, oh, here's a football game. I'll slot right in. And it was great.
It looks like he just wants to go and play football, which is great.
He had no baggage on him.
It's quite disappointing, though, how affected Aubameyang is. I mean, I'm guessing he's a confidence player, and he's come into the worst working environment in the Premier League. And like he looks like the guy that's bringing the smiles all the time, and nobody wants to smile with him because they're all totally depressed. But for a £50 million striker, he was pretty disappointing again. I know he scored a goal.
He had a tidy goal. That was a nice finish. I mean, an easy one for sure. When you're standing right there, for what was he like 6 yards out? But still, it was.
At least he was there.
Nice little scoop with the outside of the boot. Yeah, it was quality.
But I guess maybe Lacazette's sitting in his hospital bed smiling at the moment because there was no service for him. And people like me cited the fact that he had a lack of pace and physical power. Aubameyang's come in and there's no service there. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna bring up the question again. Mesut Ozil, 250,000-300,000 a week. And he's not creating anything. I haven't seen any key pass stats about Mesut of late. Is that because he just doesn't give a fuck, or like he's part of the Wenger out brigade? Or is it because he traditionally fades in the second half of the season because he's not very fit? And that's why we have to give him so many holidays.
I don't think his fitness is that bad right now. I think he's like any other player in that the situation affects them, and He's not openly sulking, but you know it's clear that like the team is not functioning in a way that's conducive to him playing well. You know, you can call it fair weather or whatever you like, but he's not there with any sort of options. Like he doesn't have a lot of key passes he can make at the moment because we've got just our striker who's very isolated, and unless you just play him through or you know take a stab at it, there's really not anywhere to play the ball to, because we don't have other, you've got Jack and Xhaka back there who are not going to really search forward. They're both going to just collect the ball. You don't really have any wingers there. You've got Iwobi who's prone to come inside as well, so there's just not a lot working in the grand scheme of things. You know,
I think you're making excuses for him.
Absolutely. But he deserves these excuses.
I don't think so. I think that, like Matt's pointed out on the podcast before, we know a leadership performance when we see it from Ozil because it stands out like a sore thumb. Ozil against Chelsea in the semi-final was different level. He dragged that team up. Can't even remember seeing him.
But you can't expect that from him because that's not the style of player. He's simply not that type of player.
How can you say it's not the style?
It's not his style.
But people say this. They make so many excuses. You can't say that.
It's not an excuse. It's just his character. That's just how he is.
But you can't say it's not his style when he did it against Chelsea, a far better side. It's just a choice. It is a choice whether he wants to stand up. Part of this comes from the manager, but part of me says...
Tell me then who is standing up at the moment. Who did you feel stood up for the team in that match? Because I don't think you could point out anyone.
But shouldn't our most expensive player, our best player, our player that we've just tied down to a massive long deal, shouldn't he be leading the side? Why is he such a shrink? Why is he so weak when he doesn't fancy it? And fans go, no, you just don't understand Ozil. I do, though, because I've got magic powers. No, he's playing like shit at the moment. As soon as he signed that new deal, he's on holiday. I was saying, he's quite often on holiday in between games, especially away games that are a little bit tough, a little Ozil. But he was definitely on holiday in that game. And if he's part of the if he's part of the Wenger out, and this is just
he was actually sick, okay? And his therapy is he needs to go to the beach.
Yeah.
He has vitamin D deficiency. He's got to absorb the rays and get back to full strength. And that's just the type of player he is, all right?
I can't wait until we get a proper manager in that gives him a half-time rollicking if he's playing like a total embarrassment. And I hope that somebody makes him accountable and pulls him up and says, this walking won't do. And stop padding your stats by just jogging around. Anyway, I'm taking telling you,
there's a systemic fix to this, though, that's much easier than yelling at Ozil.
Okay, so top level, do you think the players are downing tools or are they just completely broken?
I think they're at their breaking point or near it. What's your opinion here?
I don't know. I can't work it out. Do professional football, well, we know that Chelsea down tools successfully. They're a great side and you can see when they just don't fancy it, like they all agree, but they have like nasty characters in their side that just want to win. They got Mourinho fired. I don't quite agree that they're trying to get Conte fired at the moment. I feel like Conte's trying to get himself fired. But it doesn't look good. I don't think that the players are putting the effort in. But is it downing tools or is it like when there's nothing to fight for, don't fight?
Yeah, I think they're like lost, you know. I mean, as we'll talk about in a minute, they feel like they need help. They've got no guidance there, and I don't know, just nothing's working out for them, you know? I think they're just, like, broken.
Well, Steve Sibwell, a man who used to play for Arsenal, I think he was, like, a youth cup final captain back in the day, famous outside football for having his wedding vows tattooed across the whole of his back. So I'm not sure how much of his opinion we can take seriously, but he came out much in the same way as Troy Deeney did and said on the Arsenal game, it is what everyone has been saying of late. There are no characters, no fight, no desire, no passion to wear the shirt. And that was evident yesterday. When your fellow professionals are ribbing you like that and they play for Brighton, it's hard. That's a hard comment to ignore. People aren't fighting for the jersey. It's the comfort zone.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm conflicted. That's such a your dad quote. There's no fight. There's no desire. There's no passion. You know, but you can't say he's totally wrong, can you?
Yeah, but this is you being typically Arsenal snobby. Like when people are like, oh no, passion doesn't exist. It's like, please, passion exists at the highest level of football. Like it is a tangible asset. And can you disagree with any of that? Jack Wilshere does his, I'm going to have a faux fight on the pitch to show the fans that I care, to show the Yadars that I'm the darling of Arsenal.
Handbags time, baby. Win them over.
No one showed any character. Do you think anybody showed desire? Do you believe there was passion for the shirt out there? He's right. People just don't like it because it's British. We're not a very fashionable nation.
No, it's just couched in these weird stereotypes, passion to wear the shirt.
But are they stereotypes when it comes to Arsenal? That's the thing. They're not stereotypes.
They clearly are stereotypes. I'm not saying they're untrue in this case, but yeah.
You've been hanging out online
to feel good, but he's not totally wrong. You're not totally wrong, Steve.
They're been hanging out online for too long with those hipsters. All right? British hating. How dare you?
I've got a better quote for you right here than Steve Sidwell. I want you to listen to this. There comes a day when reality bites you on the arse, and I think today is the day. These players are not doing the job, and sadly, the manager will always have to take responsibility. It's over. Jeff Arsenal.
I don't even know why this deserves any publicity whatsoever.
Because it's like the last guy in the cult when everyone else is dead on the floor from drinking the Kool-Aid. He's looking around and just says, "Why am I here?" Like, finally the penny drops. You know, there's no one left on the Wenger Inn wagon.
Yeah, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Okay, one of the things that frustrates me about online Arsenal Twitter is everybody understands that you can make a lot of success by playing a character. And I don't always feel that there's a lot of truth in a lot of the characters that play out there. Like, I'm going to be the Wenger out guy, and I am only ever going to say Wenger out. I'm going to be the Wengerin, and I'm only ever going to say this, or I'm going to say the most outrageous thing that I can, and I'm never going to budge. And I understand that that's great because it allows people to connect with you in a way. Oh, you are this, and I will follow your positivity forever.
Yeah, I'm the Arsenal horse. That's me, a horse that supports Arsenal.
Precisely. But my thing with Le Grove is, just call it as it is. If it's going well, then say it's going well and celebrate it while it's happening. And if it's going badly, then like call it out as it is. But for anybody to be at this situation in their Arsenal Arsenal relationship to only just have said, "Oh, I don't think this is going well, lads." What have you been looking at? When you're sitting in the bar with your mates and you've just watched Arsenal get spanked 10-2 by Bayern Munich, what were you thinking? When you watched Arsenal get beat 8-2 at Old Trafford by Man United, like what do you say? Like, how can it be a forgivable position to back Arsene Wenger for this long?
I'll tell you one thing, if you listen to that quote back, these players are not doing the job. And sadly, the manager will always have to take responsibility. You see, that even there, we're doing a slight blame shift there. That, you know, really, it's the player's fault not playing for the manager.
Yeah, I mean,
never mind the shirt.
My biggest concern out of all this is, I've just been calling it right for 10 and a half years, and have any of these people who've said the meanest things about me on the internet, has anyone said, "Hey, you know what? You were right. Let me buy you a drink."
You hear that, everyone? Stop saying mean things on the internet.
Stop saying mean things on the internet. Well, at least people have come over, not to the dark side, to the light side. Okay? It's kind of like...
I'm not buzzing on budging on message.
People thought I was the enemy, but actually I wasn't. I was some sort of saint. Anyway, let's move on to the next section where we're going to talk about tears. And we're back, part two of the Arsenal Opinion podcast. We're going to talk about feelings, emotions, and tears in this section, Dan.
Ooh, should we put the music back on?
that was him. Maybe that could be nice. So The Guardian ran a piece earlier in the week, which actually didn't have a lot of information in it. It was David Hintner who penned it with a little bit of insider information. Do you want to read through it, Dan? Or do you want me to?
I'll go for it.
The speech was delivered by one of the senior players in the Arsenal dressing room, but he did not finish it. He was too choked up as he reflected on how such a talented squad had come to resemble a bunch of drifters. He said his children were asking him why Arsenal was so bad. That was the moment when the tears welled in his eyes. Another Arsenal player stepped in. "We are a big club," he said, tapping into the rally and cry theme. "But we need more help from the coaches." That was the damning judgment as it was articulated. It had actually been the motivation for the players to gather in the first place without Arsene Wenger. "It's not going to happen," one of them said. "We need to find the answers ourselves." So that was as deep as the story got, really. Then it just get carried on. Professional footballers want to win. firstly, who do we think cried?
At first, I thought it was Pear, but everyone online seems to say it was Koscielny.
I think the Sun said it was Koscielny, but we can take that with a pinch of salt. I thought it might be Jack. Looks like he could get emotional. He's got young kids.
Does Jack cry? It doesn't strike me as a...
Yeah, maybe not. But I think the point here is if your kids are being bullied, because Arsenal are shit.
Are they being bullied, though, or are people just saying, why does Arsenal suck?
If you're a kid, you're being bullied. I mean, not like when I was a kid at school, people used to say Arsenal was shit. It used to make me cry.
Sorry to hear that.
I know, it wasn't nice, but that's just what happens in an English school. But a few things that I want to talk about here. Outside, whether it was Koscielny, it doesn't really matter who it is. It's always sad if people are feeling that emotional. But what is that? What does that whole piece say about how weak we are as a squad? Like, nothing tangible has come out of that. There's just a lot of emotions, a lot of blame. Nobody's really taking the bull by the horns. And the reaction off the back of it, we lost again to City, and then we lost to Brighton. So this whole meeting achieved absolutely nothing.
Well, it gave us a nice news piece to talk about. So
yeah, but I like the news piece. Like the in 1998, we were going through a bad run in December, and I think we'd just lost to Blackburn Rovers away from home. And they had a team meeting, and Patrick Vieira was told that he needed to wake up, and some of the other players were told off, and they had this big meeting. And then next thing you know it, we're going on an amazing run, and we win the Premier League. This story, not so much. Did anybody cry in the 1998 meeting, do you think? I have my doubts. I think you get smacked over the back of the head if you cried in front of Tony Adams. So anyway, firstly, we're not allowed to say man up anymore. But we are allowed to say, where's the stiff upper lip, boys? Right? There's got to be an element
of
that.
You could say, this is a room full of men, I think, so I'll allow you to say man up here.
And it's not in a derogatory term. Can we say grow up?
Grow up.
Like, this is sport. Like, we don't want to hear your emotions right now. We want to hear how you're going to fix things. Like, is that fair?
I don't think that's fair, actually.
Do you think it should be tolerated that you cry in front of a group in a meeting when you're trying to fix things? Do you think that's a productive use of time?
That's got nothing to do with if it's productive or not. That's just where they are in the season. Everything's bottom out. They're directionless and they're searching for answers. They're feeling like shit. You know, that's sometimes emotion wells up. You know, you can't police someone's emotions.
Yeah, but you can police somebody saying, my kids are being asked if we're shit, right? What value is that adding to a meeting? How is that constructive anyway? Who cares what's going on with your kids? Tell me what's going on the pitch when you're not paying attention.
But it's like us now. It's a therapy session, you know? You just got to get it out. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they're feeling stuck, you know?
So you're pro-emotions?
Pro-emotion.
Okay, I'm anti-emotion. I don't think that's particularly productive, especially in a sporting environment. I think you should save the tears for after, especially if it's not going anywhere.
I will agree it's not quite productive, and I swear they have a meeting like this, like the players only meeting to save the season. I think this happens like every year, actually. There's always some point in the season where we're doing really poor, at least the past couple of years. We're a couple points back. We've really got to drill down and make it back into fourth. You know, I feel like we've been through this a few times. Not quite this badly, but this happens a lot, doesn't it?
And it is was my other question. So I've written on a few occasions over the last 10 years. Why don't Arsenal players coach themselves?
Well, right? Because they're like, not coaches.
Okay. Well, permits. Just take you back I'll take you back to the days when Pep Guardiola and take Mourinho were at Barcelona and Bobby Robson was the manager, and he used to put tactics up on the board. No one understood a fucking word that he was saying. So Pep Guardiola and Mourinho used to translate them, but they weren't really translating them. They were creating their own tactics for the team, and then the team would go out and do what they do, and then they'd win. Is it too much of a jump to imagine that Arsenal players could do that? You got Per Mertesacker, who's played in a Bundesliga winning side in Germany. He's played for World Cup winners, super intelligent. We've got Mesut Ozil, who's played for Madrid under Mourinho. He's played for a few great managers. there are lots of players in the team that surely must have opinions about the game, that are surely passionate about watching other sides, that have been at other clubs. Is it beyond the pale to suggest that maybe they should club together? Maybe they could get a couple of video analysts in. Maybe they could run through some scenario training. Maybe do a little bit of...
I mean, forget the players. Couldn't we get Steve Bold to pull them aside and be like, okay, defensive unit, extra practice. This is how you defend. This is how you do not cave during a match.
But we know that
couldn't that happen?
We know that he has no power because
right.
he's not empowered to do so. He's not earning enough money to retire tomorrow. He needs that job. He knows that he can't go against Wenger because he'll be out the door. But you can't put your key players out of the door. You can make them train on their own, but that's not a smart way of using your money. So I know that it's a bit absurd to assume that players could do that. But here's my thing. Maybe Chelsea players would do that. Maybe United players could do something like that. But Arsene Wenger has built that squad to be weak, hasn't he? He's intentionally not put big characters in there because he doesn't like conflict. Anybody that goes against him or questions his authority is out of the door in an instant. Robin van Persie used to scout players for Arsene and try and get players to sign for him and was disgusted at his transfer strategy. Cesc Fabregas went to that meeting and was promised the world, didn't come his way, out the door. I know that Gael Clichy used to cause trouble behind the scenes, like constantly asking why Wenger was doing things or not doing other things, pushed out the door. Wenger built a squad of players that cry when the going gets tough, right?
Another one we lost is Szczesny, who I wish we hadn't. Maybe you could argue there's no way he'd ever progress if he had stayed, but another guy that just got to the point where Wenger didn't want to deal with a bad boy and dispensed with him. And look at him now.
And you do start to look at the bad boys that leave, and you wonder whether, like when you have super intelligent kids at school, like they start acting up because they're bored. They're not being challenged. You can't imagine Max Allegri is having problems with Szczesny at the moment, right? Because Szczesny's being educated.
No,
he probably feels a little bit out of his depth.
Everyone in Italy smokes, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely not a big deal. So I think that part of this problem that we're having with players being completely disenfranchised is that Wenger built the squad that way. And he also built out his backroom team that way. Nobody is empowered to think. Nobody is empowered to come up with ideas and run with them. Nobody is given any sort of control. So
you're saying it's a massive culture of yes men.
It's a massive culture of yes men because that's the only way that you can survive at the club. And when you are the number one at what you do in any business, when you are the number one and all the decisions you make are gold, you can afford to build a team of yes men around you. But the problem is, when things start going wrong, no one's there to tap you on the shoulder and say, Arsene, this is what the fuck's going wrong. They just roll with it. And Arsene Wenger is fine with that because he keeps people like Jerry Payton. He had Steve Rowley, an atrocious scout, still at the club. He keeps all of his yes men around him, like Borough Pyramac, or however you say it. What the fuck does he do? He's the tactics guy.
He lays out the cones.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He's too old to lay out the cones. He can't bend down. What's he doing?
Yeah, and now we've got, like you said, yes players. So in this meeting, I wonder how many cried and how many are coming up with the solution or proposing a reaction. Is it all just venting or are they actually coming up with any plan of action here?
And you know what I really wonder? Did anybody say, we need to fucking get him out of here. This guy's a joke. We're never going to progress. This is going to be, if he signs on another 2-year deal, this is 2 years of a wasted career. Because if we're thinking that, surely the players who live this every day, and these players know that it's shit. They know it's a joke. I heard a story about Podolski years ago that he said to a German player before the Bayern game, that a German player said to Podolski, We've done like three and a half hours of video analysis on Arsenal. And Podolski laughed and said something along the lines of like, we've done 20 minutes on iPads. And that's the level of care that goes into it. But I just wonder why players don't go to the CEO.
It showed in his game too, I've got to say.
Yeah, I know. But again, like,
yeah,
he was.
Yeah, I don't know. You can't really go directly to the CEO, though, can you?
What,
like,
when
if
you're,
you, if you're having a problem with your boss, you can't just go to the CEO of the company and complain.
What if the problem's been happening for 10 years? surely, the CEO.
But you've only been there 3 yourself, so where does that put you?
But surely the CEO should be finding out what's going on the ground. Shouldn't he be sitting and talking to the coaches and going, guys, what the fuck's going on? Shouldn't he?
He's shown he's not quite that type of CEO, is he?
What, really? Because he's, don't we do an investigation every season? What happens in that review? Does Wenger sit in there with them, just staring at them? What did you see, Jerry?
Like I always say, judge me in May, but he never tells you which year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so we agree that Wenger should be fired. There are some top ITK accounts. They do exist, that are saying Wenger is on death row. So we've got that Chris Mahler chap saying that if Wenger doesn't win the Europa League, he's out the door. We've got AFC Camden, who is a good source of information, also saying that Wenger is finished. So we're very excited about that. And you've got another statistic that you saw.
Right. I saw the AST released their poll on members' opinions, and 88% of them said Wenger should not manage Arsenal next season.
And I kind of felt like last season the AST made a bit of a mistake. They didn't release their poll until too late in the game. I think that, not that it would have made any difference to Stan Kroenke, but at least they've got that number out there early, when you'd assume that Josh Kroenke and Stan Kroenke are making decisions at the moment. So basically, everybody in media wants Wenger out. So we wanted to run some scenarios. So we've got the most aggressive scenario, and that is that Arsene Wenger goes right now. So the case for Arsene Wenger going right now, we're closer to seventh than we are to fifth. We're probably going to go out of the Europa League. And wouldn't it be a great idea to hire in a manager now who could start fixing problems in March instead of bringing somebody in on the 31st of May? The challenges that you have with this are there aren't a lot of world-class coaches around looking for jobs in March. But we do have some options. Thierry Henry is thirsty as fuck. Is he not?
Yeah, he's using his platform distastefully, you might say, to put his name out there over and over.
Yeah, it's Frank Underwood type behavior going on. He was asked whether he'd take on the job, and he said that he was a competitor and he'd never turn down a challenge. So
yeah, he really dressed it up and made it sound like, you know, oh, it's this family and you've got to help out if they need your help. But come on, Thierry, don't play dumb.
So pros for Thierry Henry, I got to say that he loves the club. He's played under Arsene Wenger in his peak years. He's played under Pep Guardiola. He's played for the New York Red Bulls. He's won a lot of things. He's got a great reputation. I know that from reading parts of his book, when he first came over to England and he was living in a hotel, I think they installed 3 televisions in his hotel room so that he could watch 3 games at a time. So he's a student of the game. And I've watched a few training videos. I think it was You Are My Arsenal shared some training videos from Philadelphia where he was talking about the mental side of the game. He said that he relearned how to play football under Pep Guardiola, the master. So maybe some of that's rubbed off. He's done a bit of tutelage under Martinez.
Yeah, I might put that in the negative column.
Yeah, that's
probably only coaching he's doing right now is part-time under Roberto Martinez. So, yeah, negative. It's not really in it. Also, you know, yes, he was with Pep, but how many years ago was that? I don't know. Is that relevant? Now his job is really spitting out hot takes. And to top it off, he's bald. So how good of a candidate could he be?
So you would say a no.
I think I'd pass. at least right now. I can't see him being ready to take the reins.
The pro voices of Omri feel very much like the voices that were calling for Alan Shearer to take over Newcastle. You know, sometimes you just shouldn't make your heroes the manager of your club.
Yeah, or when Kenny Dalglish was coming back to Liverpool again, it's just like,
yeah,
just because they're your hero doesn't mean they're going to be your hero in a different role.
But anybody but Wenger mindset feels right, but it won't feel right when Thierry Henry is fucking things up. And also, if he did badly, you'd have that sort of double whammy of, oh, not only is Thierry failing, a new manager failing, it's Thierry Henry.
And yeah, you feel bad, oh, right?
Ugh. Like, you could imagine
two tarnished legacies in a row.
No, imagine singing Thierry out. Oh, that would be awful. Imagine having to write a hate piece about Thierry. So, Tony Adams,
also throwing his name in the ring. Based on an Instagram comment, I think.
Yeah?
He said something like...
Is he wearing that green suit again?
Yeah, I hope so. That would be great. But yeah, he said something like, I'm under contract with the Chinese, but... if the family needs me, you know, I don't really know what that means, but
I don't mean to be mean, but I do think at the heart of it with Tony Adams, he's just not the sharpest.
he doesn't seem like it, does he?
He gives the impression that he's the wisest person on the planet. But when you scratch beneath the surface, not a lot of what he says or does really smacks of Arsenal 2018.
But isn't this the leadership and passion you've been crying out for?
You can be passionate and you can be a leader and you can be smart all at the same time. When people talk about Steve Jobs as a leader, they talk about his passion, and no one in tech goes, passion, can't have no passion. You want to be like Zuckerberg, do they? Why is it, as soon as you mention passion in English football, it's almost racist. I said it.
Agreed.
I can say that as well because I'm in America.
It's a white genocide, in my opinion.
Okay, but how about Pep Guardiola throwing Arteta's name into the ring? I know we did this a little bit on the last one. We feel a bit more positive about this.
Yeah, Arteta sounds great, but we're just, you know, feels early for him still. He feels like the guy after the guy, right?
I wouldn't want him to come in to a hot mess.
Right. You want more experience to come in and take the reins. It's a huge club. We're far below where we want to be, but you know, you can't take that big of a risk right away, right?
No. Finally, Steve Bould.
Yeah, that's an interesting prospect. So if Steve Bould is loyal, as you're saying, or needs to be, what if Ivan told him, hey Steve, I'm going to get rid of Wenger. I want you to be the caretaker and see out the year. Maybe finish sixth for me. Maybe win Europa League. Think you can do it, buddy? Then we'll talk in summer.
I think it would be an interesting plan, and it can't be any worse than what's going on at the moment. But wasn't it Steve Bould who was in charge at Nottingham Forest when Wenger was suspended?
Oh, was he?
I think so. But it shouldn't go against him. I think Steve Bould.
That's one game, though.
Like, yeah, you know. I think Steve Bould is charismatic. I think he's a cool head. I think he knows all of the problems that are going on at the club. I think he's smart, and I think he's got a great reputation amongst the players. I think that could be the smartest move if we got rid of Wenger right now.
My only thing is, I feel like he's such a part of the establishment, even though he's only been there the past couple of years. It's still a situation where you feel like you want to clean house and help everyone move on. And I don't think he helps everyone move on necessarily. So I'm on the fence about that one. I'm more into scenario two, which is Wenger goes in the summer.
Okay.
What do you think about this? What's the chance this happens? It seems like it's picking up steam that I can scarcely believe it, but he may actually lose his job before his contract ends. Seems like something that's totally impossible, and you couldn't even have said that a week or two ago, but it feels like a very real possibility now. Do you think Josh Kroenke, Ivan get together and they pull the trigger in the summer?
I think the Stan is fascinated by his LA Rams project. I think he's bringing in Josh to take over the reins at Arsenal. And I think he understands how much Arsenal fans are tired of Wenger. And I think what a great political move. Josh comes in, first job, fire Wenger. This is the new era. So I think that that's what's going to happen. I agree with you. I think it's more likely to happen in the summer. But we can't allow this indecisive, typical boardroom behaviour to happen. I think the club, in the next 2 weeks, need to make a decision. Arsene, you're done. We've ramped up our search and select, and we're going to make an appointment. We're going to keep this all secret, and we're going to back channel between you and this guy and hand over the reins. So the new guy isn't starting on the 31st of May. Because it wouldn't be a disaster. A disaster would be Wenger. But give everybody stability. Tell the players, you have got to play for Wenger. Like, this behaviour that's happening is fucking unacceptable. We want you to win the Europa League for him. Send him off with a little bit of dignity. We want these last 2-3 months to be amazing for him. We don't care that you're not going to get into the top four, but your careers are on the line. The new manager's watching, so buck up and play your hearts out. And then we can do exactly what City did with Pep Guardiola, because they let everybody know that he was coming in February, so that when he arrived, it wasn't all new. Because we can't really have a 6-week exploration session where you sit there and meet people. You start on the 31st of May, you've got to be straight into that job, working out who to buy and how to fix things. And I would rather the new manager came in like knowing what needed to be done, rather than like basically, right. Because if you come in that late, you're guessing.
Yeah, you've got to be part of that whole process.
Yeah.
You can't come in halfway through the transfer window and try to put something together on the fly.
And that's the thing with the summer move. Move for a manager in the summer, great, but do it properly, because we just have a habit of fucking things up. Like, we should never have let last season get to the stage that it did, and it was appalling. And last summer's debacle then led Wenger to have a shocking summer ahead of it, because he didn't know that he was staying. He didn't know he was staying right up until the last minute. So then it was like, what are we gonna do?
Yeah, and he's admitted as much that it affected everyone in the side.
Yeah, and it messed up, and we didn't know what we were doing with Ozil. We didn't know what we were doing with Sanchez. We tried to sign Lamar. We didn't sign a defender. Absolute disaster. Let's not have that. Let's just okay. So we like scenario two. Here is the absolute nightmare scenario, but it's the best kind of nightmare, right? Scenario three, he wins the Europa League, takes us back to the Champions League. What do you do then?
You know, we feel good. We string together a couple of victories. We get a trophy, a European trophy that's eluded us for so long. And we give Wenger another year.
It would be so Wenger, wouldn't it?
It would be so Wenger. And honestly, the cynic deep inside me keeps saying this is going to happen. He's gonna wait till he turns things around, pick up a couple wins. He's gonna say, "Oh, we've got belief again. The crisis is over. I know I can turn this around. I can do it. Only I can do it. And I always see out my contract. I always honor my contract," which he loves to say, which is such a weird thing in any other club, in any other sport, even. Where else do you even hear that? You know, it's such a weird situation. But I just like see him pulling that out. And going into another year.
I think that regardless of whether he wins that trophy, it should be over. Like, you cannot ignore the problems that he's had this season with playing basically one game a week, even if he delivers a trophy. If he delivers a trophy, that is the send-off he deserves. You won your first European trophy for Arsenal, the first big trophy. I mean, can we say the Europa League is a big trophy?
Oh, yeah.
That's a big trophy.
It's got three handles, I think. Is that Europa League? No, that's the Community Cup or whatever it is. No. But, what's the Europa League trophy look like? Who knows?
I think it's like the big...
I'm sure it's very tall, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big trophy.
But yeah, okay. So scenario three is the most ideal situation, right? Mm. He wins it, we still fire him.
Let me ask you, what chance do you give this of happening, though, of him continuing one more year?
If he wins the Europa League, 75%.
75, wow.
Of him staying.
Yeah,
but I don't think he's going to win the Europa League. Let's be realistic.
Those players
don't have it in them to beat what are we in the last 16? So we've got the last 16 quarters and semis over two legs. There's no way we've got that in us.
There's actually a lot of good clubs still in the league, though. Atletico Madrid still in. Dortmund's still in. Red Bull. Both Red Bulls are still in. Marseille and Lyon are both in. There's third and fourth place teams in France right now. So there's, you know, there's decent competition still. We can't get around. There's no easy walk to the final, I don't think.
Marseille and Lyon are interesting sides.
Mm-hmm.
They pack through.
They would give us trouble.
Pack with some good players. Leipzig would definitely cause us problems. Is it Red Bull Salzburg?
Yes.
Salzburg, incredibly fit side. And play with the same high intensity as their German counterparts. Dortmund have not really hit it off this season, but they still have a lot of good players. And Atleti, no chance. No chance we'll be able to turn over those guys.
No, could you see us scoring against Atleti?
No, absolutely not.
I can't imagine.
The worry would be if they went out before and we got like one of those FA Cup runs that we've been so famous for, playing all the easy sides up until the final, and like the Wenger luck, the last gasp. But I think that this is beyond him. But we do have Milan up on Thursday.
Mm.
How are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling intrigued because, like the quote you led off with to start the episode from Wenger, Gattuso, the current Milan manager, had a very interesting one too. You read that to you,
yeah.
So Gattuso goes, as long as my players show respect, not for me, but for the locker room, their teammates, and the club, I will tear my heart out of my chest and let them play keepy-uppy with it.
Wow.
Passion merchant, right?
He's a passion merchant.
Passion merchant.
but because he's Italian, it's classy and it's endearing.
Yeah.
And you want to be a part of it.
You
but when
it's
it. An English guy... And he's like, I want you to rip up my bag of fish and chips and play keepy uppy with it. All of a sudden, it's not classy because it because it doesn't have a $3,000 suit.
Yeah, he and Wenger are both prone to saying some interesting things. So I was wondering if I could quiz you. Could I give you a quote and you tell me which poetic philosopher said it? Mm-hmm. Arsene Wenger or Rino Gattuso?
Yep.
All right. Here's the quote. What is most important is focusing on what's important and that you give absolutely your best with full commitment.
Gattuso.
No, that is the passion merchant Arsene Wenger. All right, let me give you another one. I must tell you honestly, at the moment, my future is not my main worry. My worry is to win football games.
Wenger.
Wenger, that is Wenger.
Big Vang.
Big Vang. All right, so who said this? If we want to think about a Champions League place, then this is like a final.
Gattuso.
That is Gattuso.
Yeah.
Thought the like a final may trip you up, but no, that was Gattuso when they were going to head into the Milan Derby, which is, of course, postponed. Here's another one. I believe the quality of a manager is to try to shorten the crisis. I believe I can do it.
Oh, God, that could be Wenger. Wenger.
That is Wenger. That was Wenger just recently. He said that. Let's see. Here's another one. We need to get back to being a side who gives emotions to the fans, and I think we're heading that way.
Oh, that's got to be Gattuso.
That's Gattuso for
so
sure.
So Italian, that one.
So
isn't
Italian.
It?
Yeah. We give it the emotion to the fan. They love it.
But he has British passion.
Yes.
About him because he obviously played in Scotland for Rangers.
Did he? Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So he knows
absolute
real passion.
Madman.
He knows the fancy passion with the red wine, and he knows the Scottish passion, the deep fried Mars bar.
Yes, breaking the liquor bottle over your head.
Yeah.
I keep saying passion merchant, but I love Gattuso. He was one of my favorite players in those old Milan and Italy sides as well.
And
he's an absolute maniac. I love him. I love when he took his pants off and ran around for no reason at all. He's just a crazy dude.
But here's the thing, isn't it? That we have a better team than Milan, but we're not organized.
Mm-hmm.
What wins? Talent or organization?
Yeah.
My gut says...
Milan don't have a good team, but they haven't lost in quite a while now.
13 games, I believe.
13 games, wow.
Yeah. And I think they beat Roma. So they've beaten some good sides. So that's what's going to happen. And can you beat an organized Gattuso team that's fired up? It's probably the least ideal place to be going right now for us at Wenger, right?
Yeah, it's definitely going to... Oh man, it's not what we need at the moment.
Or the most ideal, because if he beats Milan, people go back to that early 2000s Milan team, don't they? You don't think of Milan as being shit.
I mean, is what we need someone to get up in our faces?
Maybe.
Push us in the chest, you know, get us fired up.
Maybe some of that big game excitement, because, you know, we've had some good big games recently. Mm-hmm. Well, not many. I mean, we beat Chelsea.
Yeah. It depends how you define recently, I suppose. But
so predictions?
Yeah. For Milan or for the future?
Milan?
Milan.
And the future, where's it going?
Milan, yeah. I don't think we get it done. I think the mighty organized Milan is going to trip us up. It didn't sound like the players meeting solved anything. I don't think Wenger's really got the answers too. So yeah, I think it's a loss for us.
I agree. I think that we're going to lose. I don't want us to win either. I know that sounds really shitty, but I don't want the fairy tale ending. I don't even want he almost did because he made a semi-final and that's better than we normally do. I don't want anything to get in the way of Wenger being gone. Because I just can't put up with another year of it.
That used to sound like sacrilege to me, and I never, ever understood the perspective of wanting a loss or not wanting the team to do the best they could. But I don't know. I just don't. I can't find myself caring as much anymore just because it's gotten so bad.
Because here's the thing. If he does win the Europa League, it's not one extra year. It's two.
Two? You think it's two now?
Wait, we'll have to be because... Yeah,
you think he puts a little bumper on his contract?
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. First European Cup in the Emirates, it'd be horrific. Yeah.
Well, then you've got to get him the chance to go for the Champions League, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like two years to do that's fair. I feel like maybe one more. Maybe he gets a 2-year extension. Maybe three.
No, don't. Right. I think that takes us up to our hour. That felt cathartic.
Yes.
You feeling good?
No, not really. But you know.
Okay.
I feel better.
Who we got at the weekend in the Premier League?
Oh, that's a good question. We should look that up.
Yeah. So Milan on Thursday night. It's a 6 o'clock kickoff. 6 o'clock on a Thursday night. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Then we've got Watford at home. That'll be a great one. Followed by Milan. Followed by Stoke. An interesting grouping of games. Watford have got quite the Italian influence anyway, so it'll feel very Italian over the next few weeks. Anyway, enough rambling from me. Dan, thank you for joining the podcast.
Cheers, Pete.
And on that note, I will say goodbye.
Get right to the romance and find the way to wow this Valentine's with 1-800-Flowers.com. From classic roses and bouquets to decadent chocolate-covered berries, gourmet treats, and more, surprise your Valentine with 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, get the 18-stem Enchanted Rose Medley for $39.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Headlines seize our attention, especially when they're about a crime.
But there's more to these stories than just their headlines.
I'm Carrie Ipama.
And I'm Quinlan Posner.
Every week we'll bring you a real crime that made the headlines. One you may have heard of before, or one you may have never imagined possible.
But we'll take you beyond what you see on the front page. We'll follow the story as it happens in real time and use hindsight to pull apart fact from fiction.
From Lifetime comes a brand new weekly podcast, Crime of a Lifetime.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.